This is a Collider.com audio interview.
All right, say your name.
Sarah Linsinga, I do animation, additional character design, and concept.
And I'm John Davis, and I wrote, directed, and produced Ant Bully.
Chris Consani is the art director on Ant Bully.
My name's Buck Lewis, and I was lead character designer.
And I'm Bob Eggleton, and I was a conceptual artist on the movie.
So where did the concept come from, to make an Ant movie based on the vision of the Ant rather than the person?
It started with a book. It's based on the book The Ant Bully by John Nichol. And it's a picture book. It's got very few words in it, I think maybe 2,000 words, something like that. But the whole idea of the story was there. And Tom Hanks had read this book to his son Truman and thought that, hey, this could make a cool movie. And Jimmy Neutron, which is the first film I made, had just come out, and Tom saw it and liked it and thought that that I would be good, to get involved in this film. So he sent the book to me to see if I had a take on it, and I thought about it for a few days, and then, called him back and said, sure, I'd love to have meet with you and talk to you about it and see, how, at least tell you what I thought, that I would do if I were to turn it into a movie. So, and that kind of started the whole thing moving. So.
You talk, this is the third animated film about ants. Can you talk about distinguishing the look of your ants? Because actually some of them look strikingly similar to the DreamWorks ants, and I was just wondering how that similarity happened, because I was looking for the connections.
Well, I think part of it is the fact that they're ants. There's going to be certain similarities that are hard to avoid. I mean, they're definitely different than what we've seen with Bug's Life. They're blue and bipedal. But they were six-legged and ants, and ours are six-legged, of course. But side by side, I know there's a lot of differences when you look, because with ants they had noses, little human teeth, little human hands, and stuff like that.
The motion too is totally different.
Yeah, and the way they move is very, very different. So on the surface of it, I could see where certain ones might remind you, but we felt like they were certainly different enough once you see them in action in the film. There's certain similarities. They have antennas, and I don't know if they had mandibles on them or not. I don't think they did.
So
we've got mandibles. So
I think it's good to consider that, though. You have the challenge of going to a place that's been, in at least from a design perspective, it's been visited before, and for me that was actually it was an attractive challenge to think like, okay, look, can we design ants that are unique and that are there's something different about them, and that's some of the givens of the bug world are really challenging. There's no fur, there's no hair, there's nothing to work with. They're just exoskeleton, and that some of those things that you and then we're going to turn a bug into something that's going to perform like in a way that we can connect with what they're emoting, and so we can bond with that performance. And so that creates a pretty narrow realm.
I thought the head shapes and everything were very different. Like Zoc he's a wizard, so it's almost like he's got a wizard hat on. He's got this big, sort of half moon shaped head, and then Fugax is more swashbuckling.
The queen's very different.
Yeah, very, very alien and exotic, and even Fugax has sort of a split star shaped head and chin, and so we tried to really make them have distinct different head shapes and silhouettes and things.
I know the minute I started, I just said to myself, I'm not going to watch Bug's Life for ants. I think, you're definitely bound to have similarities, but I just wanted, when you sort of get influenced by just watching something. Mm-hmm. So from the minute we started, I still didn't see them again.
I think also the reverse, like in those movies, the ants and Bug's Life, you had human, human characteristics sort of dialed into what ants would be. This one's like ants dialed into what, a society, give them human attributes, things we can connect with, but they're still ants. You start with an ant first.
And for me, there was never any sort of, for a while I had this certain initial knee-jerk reaction to, like, oh, there's been two ant movies, oh, do we need a third one? But then the more I thought about it, it's like, it's all about the story, and if the story is worth telling, and it's like, there's a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of cowboy movies, and the cowboys all look alike. They all have hats and boots and, ride horses and stuff. And so, but it doesn't, it's all about the story, so.
Can you talk a little about the
Yeah. Depending on your perspective.
Or, did you actually actively go after some people that you knew you really wanted to have attached?
Yeah, we sort of put together a list. Like, I had my list of favorites, and Playtone, Tom's company, they had a list, and Warner's had a list, and we all sort of compared lists and made the uber list of our dream team. And it just so happened that we just sort of got everybody, which is weird because, and it certainly helped to have Tom attached to the project as a producer to help get the script to them because they're looking at a lot of projects, and that's the first hurdle, you know. So at least we got the script to them, and then they really responded to the script, and so I was very excited. And Julia was the first one that came on, and then Nick followed, and then it was like, wow. Julia Roberts and Nick Cage, wow. And then Meryl Streep, and like, Meryl Streep. And when they told me that, I was like, it was kind of nutty. So it's like, well, like, where do you go from here?
Paul.
Yeah. Right. Paul Giamatti, exactly. Yeah, Paul is great. He's awesome. But they all did great. It was fun to be able to work with like Lily Tomlin and Bruce Campbell and Regina King and Cherry Terry, Larry Miller, Ricardo Montalban. Thank you. That's who I was leaving out. Yeah,
because did you get any of them to work together, or were they all done?
They were all done separately because their schedules are so wacky that you can't get them together. And they want to work together. Like Julia and Nick really wanted to read together, and I desperately wanted them to work together because you get a lot of great natural back and forth. It makes all of our jobs harder when you don't have that, because then you have to get a spectrum of performance, not knowing how the other actor is going to read, so that I'm able to kind of Frankenstein it together with the editors and try to put something together that sounds natural. It's really tricky to do, particularly recording sometimes weeks and months apart. So.
Did you see any of the actors take shape while you were reading? Did you kind of maybe change some things once you heard or saw some of their movements?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Because as far as the script goes, definitely, you know, things will change in the dialogue and how they say things. You know, once I'm hearing them say the words, and it's like, oh, you know, it doesn't sound, you know, Nick would really say it like this, or this is what, you know, this sounds more like him, and you'll start changing the script. And they're encouraged to go off script, too. I tell them, you know, just, we'll cover it, and then put it in your own words, go off, don't you know, just you know, act it out, and don't worry about the dialogue, and see where they go.
With a cast like this, are you ever just prone to doing R-rated things just for you guys?
There was some of that, actually. Yeah, it was funny, because I was able to get Larry Miller and Sherry O'Terry together, and they did a lot of stuff. We actually had a couple scenes that we had unfortunately cut that were really great and really funny, but you always have to, you know, sacrifice some scenes for pacing and stuff. But and they got a little, you know, a little blue and had a little fun with the material at times.
Some funny lines for our exploratory animation.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's a kids' movie, so you can't even put that on the DVD.
Oh no, no, no.
DVD plans do you have?
Yeah, they're putting out I guess the DVD is coming out in November, and it'll have a bunch of extras and some making of stuff. And some of the deleted scenes are going to be on there. There's one in particular that I really, really loved and hung on to for a long time, and finally I took it out of the film just for pacing. But there's a backstory of Zoc, Nick Cage's character, that he came from another colony that had been wiped out by the 6th Terminator, so you really find out why he hates the humans so much. And it was kind of a flashback to when he was a young pupa, and we actually see this decimation take place, and it was just executed so well, and the animators did such a great job with it. It just was great and really touching, but it was just happening at a point in the film where we were just down too low, too long, and it just, you know, I wound up having to take it out. But it's going to be on the DVD. So.
Was it finished?
It was all animated. It wasn't final lit, but it was all animated. So.
And how do you do behind-the-scenes stuff for kids so it's not, like, stupid and insulting?
Well, we did. The one we did is very stupid and insulting, so couldn't avoid it. Unavoidable. No, it's. I think they did a really good job. I just saw the first cut of it, and the Beetle character that Rob Paulsen voices sort of interviews me. I'm the weak link in the making of the best. The cool stuff is all the behind the scenes stuff that they shoot. And I thought they did a pretty good job with it.
So, is there ever going to be a Jimmy Neutron, you know, sequel or more TV shows? Or?
I don't know. We've been talking about a spinoff potentially that Nickelodeon wants to do, but we're still just talking right now, so we'll see.
Is Tom Hanks on some sort of kick for doing children's books? Because after this and Polar Express, do you have a sense of what he sees in these stories to become movies?
Yeah, well, I think he has a definite interest in doing family films, and feels like there's a lot of great literature out there for kids, and it inspires him. And because, yeah, definitely, I mean, Polar Express and Napoli, I know there's other things they're looking at that are based on children's books. So, yeah, it's definitely something that he's mining.
Was there a character for him that you didn't have a chance to get in?
No, he, you know, just coming off Polar Express, where he did like 40,000 voices, he's like, you know, I don't want to do a voice. I just want to produce. I don't need to do a voice. And so, yeah, it was never something that he looked to do.
Stayed on July 28th. How soon do you have to have it done? I mean, a lot of filmmakers are working to the very last second, and I'm not sure how it is with animation. What's your cut? You know, mm-hmm. Put it all come together at the end.
Let's see. We were working up until the very last second for us, which meant we had to finish in time to allow for the lab to make all the prints, and we had to finish a little bit early because of IMAX, because IMAX also requires a long time to make prints, because there's not a lot of facilities to do them. There's only like one or two places that can make the prints, and they make them very slowly. And since it is IMAX 3D, you have to make two prints for each theater. You know, there's two prints, left eye and a right eye, so it makes it, you know, twice as long. So I'm trying to remember the date we actually wrapped. When was it? 1 month ahead. Yeah. So that gives us enough time to finish all the lab processes, do the prints, and allows IMAX to finish. But
have you watched the IMAX version yet?
You know, I've seen every shot back in our office. You know, of course, our IMAX, or we don't have an IMAX screen, which is a normal screen, but we put on the glasses and watch it. And but only, I guess, a couple of days ago, we were in Chicago, and they showed the IMAX version at the Navy Pier IMAX, which is a huge theater. And I walked in the last 10 minutes, and it blew me away, because I was standing in the back, and I was shocked at how incredibly cool it was. And I hadn't seen the whole movie yet. I'm still waiting to see the entire movie. I'll see it, I think, Monday, because they finished the IMAX version while I've been on the road. So,
are there any particular shots that you could post specifically keeping 3D in mind to take advantage of?
Yeah, fortunately, we didn't have to do a lot of that, because things kind of just sort of worked. But there's definitely choices where if you don't crop things, you know, you could float them out into the audience more. But if you crop it, if it's bleeding out of frame, it breaks the illusion. So you just make choices in terms of, you know, composition like that. But it's more about certain things you would do as a director in terms of your depth of field. Like if you're to get depth in a shot, if I'm focusing on you at a close-up, I'll throw the background in soft focus, and it forces your attention to the foreground, and it also gives the illusion of depth. But in 3D, IMAX 3D, stereoscopic, what happens is you get that depth automatically with the process. And if you throw something out of focus, it actually causes the opposite to happen. It causes more attention to the thing that's out of focus, and it kind of becomes distracting. So you actually toss away some of the devices you might normally use. And then other things like fast cutting can create a problem in IMAX, because there's a scene in the movie where Krila and Fugax are having this argument. They're just like cutting back and forth really quick to these over-the-shoulder crosses, and they just start pounding you in the face. And so you'll flatten it out so the stereoscopic is not as exaggerated just for those moments. And then you kind of go back to more fully realized stereoscopic. So little things like that you have to season to taste so it doesn't drive the audience crazy.
Is there a particular character or scene that was more difficult to animate because of either 3D or IMAX or just in general?
Go, Sarah, go.
You know what? Okay, I'll tell you the scenes that we all hated and we all just got, like, when it came through the departments, it was coming to animation, we were like, no! There's a sequence in the movie where it's an obstacle course, and the ants are all joining hands to form bridges and like ropes and stuff. And if you were to draw it, if it's traditional animation, it wouldn't be that hard. But technically, I mean, you have every character's a separate rig, and if, you know, characters are going to hold hands, you have to basically program them to hold hands, or let go or hold an object or, you know, all that sort of stuff. So it was very technically difficult. And whenever you're focusing on technical stuff, I mean, acting becomes like secondary, and that's horrible. You know, it shouldn't be that way. So it was hard to keep that balance. I mean, it was so technically difficult, but you still wanted to, you know, make it interesting and make the characters, you know, act and all that sort of stuff. So that was incredibly difficult. And I think the final battle as well was a challenge. There was a lot of, I know John had a lot of specific ideas of how he wanted the ships to move, and we would get the ships from Leo, sorry. But we would get Leo versions of this, and we would have to find ways to emulate the layout with animation and maintain all the movement, but then throw that acting back in on top of it. So
that's kind of a good point, too, just to jump in talking about the differences with IMAX, too. You can also do a lot of cheats to camera normally in a normal movie, where when the ants are grabbing a hold of arms, sometimes they can't really reach, and you can kind of line it up and cheat it to camera, where it looks like they've grabbed a hold of each other, but they haven't really. But in IMAX, I mean, you can't do that, because for IMAX, it'll look like they're way behind them, and you have to keep it totally honest for the format. So, yeah.
Could the other three gentlemen talk about some of your specific contributions to the film?
Yeah. Barry Jackson was a production designer, and I worked pretty closely with him and John. John, it was really nice having John directing, because he knew what he wanted. And as we were going along creating an art index, which is basically just a lot of paintings and concept paintings depicting scenes and jiving with the story reel, I think what we're very proud of is the color script. It has very nice changes in tone, and we graphed out the script in peaks of excitement and low points, and we were able to take the color script and marry a scheme to that, a specific color scheme. And of course, a lot of the environments just dictated that. But that, and also spatially, just trying to, you know, you talked about characters, the ant characters, and trying to make a film that looked a little different than some of the films that were preceding. And I'd say the environments, too, in this movie are very different, skewed in very different ways. And we might have made it very important that the human world and the ant world be very different in spatially, with space, line, color, very flat in the human world, very squared off, very round and deep space in the underground scenes. And in that, when you're changing tone, you're using shape and all of the all those elements that, visually to make it and give it more impact and give it what the story deserves. So that was lots of fun doing that.
My contribution was lead design. I think of it like I love the way Chris, the way you're describing that, the choices that are made about the various environments and how they reflect it. It all comes from story. We've been talking about that. Like that, just all the decisions related to character too. They're all driven by story. So it's like, yeah, for me, it was like I think that what I'm most proud of in terms of contribution might be the combining the two worlds, the ant world and the human world. I see it like it's tremendously challenging to design human characters in CG, that it's something that there's a lot of potential pitfalls along the way. And then designing bugs, ants specifically, that have been done, it just feels like a really interesting challenge. And I love John's take on this, going into this world with an entirely different perspective, that we're experiencing this an alien culture, if you will, that's completely like has a whole functioning mythology and everything's intact. It's like a completely functioning world, and that John was very consistent about that, like Chris was saying, from the get-go, and that played out into character design as well, that he wanted to have that, have it feel that way, like we're encountering an alien culture. And going back to human design, I think it's like just that I want to see, like I think of a character design that's successful, that it's not distracting. Like as we watch it, we're watching the character, we're empathizing with it, and you can enjoy it, and it's really cool looking and everything. But really, I consider my job successful if you're connecting with the story. If you're going there, then to me it's starting to work.
That was the whole idea from the beginning, was creating an alien environment. And really, you know, they had their own environment. Like, for example, it was very early concept work when Jobs was reading the script in a big room, and we went over ideas, and it was like we were thinking, what does an ant mound look like? To us, it looks just like a little pile of dirt, but to them, it's like Ayers Rock in Australia or something. It's this really incredible, holy thing, and you see almost patterns and stuff that we wouldn't see on it, and you're looking up at everything, and you go from that world, and you think yourself in that world, and it really plays right through for the full design of everything. And what's nice is seeing some initial designs, and you can't be sacred to anything, because some designs you do, and things just go out. They get written out of the script, or they're not good ideas, or whatever. And sometimes you take a good idea, and it's, you know, and, you know, Buck will make it a better idea, you know? And it'll just go in and crystal and go through it and the whole thing. And when you see the final design and the final film is the product, and everybody has their vision that's touched it. And so it's no one person's thing, except in the end it's John's vision, but it's you know, we all sort of had a hand in it, and it looks a little bit like everybody's, and that's just a nice feeling.
That's why everybody's name is at the end.
Thank you.